sales win rates have plummeted to a mere 17%, and outdated technology and tedious manual processes are to blame. Meanwhile, managers lack the visibility they need to hold their teams accountable. But imagine a world in which these crippling issues are solved automatically. Revenue.io automates the most frustrating parts of sales so reps can focus on what they do best, selling. Completely automate pre-call research, logging conversation data in your CRM, writing post-conversation recap emails, and prioritized outreach. And as reps book more meetings and close more deals, managers gain the real-time insight they need to scale what's working across their entire team. Ready to say goodbye to tedious sales processes and watch your win rate soar? Head over to revenue.io to learn more.
I've said that to CEOs when I go in and take a role. I said, you know what? You're not going to have to worry about firing me for non-performance. I'll see it before you will. And like you, I can't think of many of those situations. But no, I'm accountable and I'm going to hold myself accountable. And if I'm can't be successful, don't you worry. You're not going to have a hard, like, that's not tolerable for me.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Sales Enablement Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Paul. Now, that was Bridget Gleason, and Bridget is the Chief Sales Officer at Silk. Now, in case you weren't paying attention, you're not counting along with us, this is kind of a milestone episode. This is episode 1000 of the Sales Enablement Podcast. So I'm thankful and grateful for all of you who have been with us along the entire journey from episode zero, or maybe it's just to have joined us more recently. Now, Bridget is really the only possible person who could have been my guest on this podcast, on this milestone episode of this podcast. And the reason is very simple, because Bridget has been a guest on the show over 130 times out of 1,000 episodes. So over 10% of the episodes have had Bridget as a guest. Now, for the newer listeners, you might not know that Bridget was my co-host every Friday for the first few years of the show. And we called those episodes Frontline Friday because Bridget, as well as myself, has been on the front line of sales as a CRO, as Chief Sales Officer, VP of Sales for high growth startups for many years now. So in our conversation today, we're doing something that we've done a few times before. Namely, I'm turning the hosting duties over to Bridget. She's going to be asking the questions in particular. She's going to be asking me questions about my new book. Now, in case you missed it, last week I announced that my new book is coming out soon, actually in February 2022, so it's 90 days away. The book's title is Sell Without Selling Out, A Guide to Success on Your Own Terms. And Bridget is one of the small number of people who have had the chance to actually read the book. So she's going to lead the conversation and provide you with an early look at how you can sell without selling out. And also, just a shameless plug, the book is available for pre-order at all of your favorite online booksellers. Now, before we get to Bridget, I want to remind you to subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. And if you subscribe, we'd certainly appreciate it if you could also give us your feedback about how we're doing by leaving us a review. We'd really appreciate it. So let's jump into it. Bridget, welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show.
I know. It's welcome back because what number is this, Andy, that I have been on?
I think for you, this is episode 130. So just so people know, this we're recording episode 1000. This is episode 1000. And I thought there's no better guest to have on episode 1000 than Bridget, who was my...
Also known as...
Captain Fantastic, who was my co-host on 130 episodes. Think about that. I mean, people come on the show and they think, ah, I've been here five times and, you know, do I get the blaze special blazer? And it's like, no. You're never going to catch up to Bridget.
No. And tell me when somebody gets close so I can, you know, keep my lead. I like to have a healthy lead.
Yeah, no one's going to get down to closer to 120 behind you. So, Yeah. So for, again, for people that maybe are a little bit newer listeners, for about the first 3+ years of this podcast, is Bridget was my guest every Friday. And we called it Frontline Fridays. And yeah, we talked about the current tough issues of the day.
And by the way, Bridget is still on the front lines.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So frontline. I'm not over on the side consulting. Hey, right. No.
Writing books. No. Bridget's in it every day.
In it every day. That's right. And loving it.
And loving it. Right. So tell people where you are right now.
Right now I'm at Silk.
And they do.
US. Silk is a data, we call it the database supercharger. So it's a database layer. It's a layer that sits on top of cloud infrastructure to help database workloads get really high performance.
Got it. And you are the chief sales officer.
True that.
Very nice.
That's true.
So you've been CRO or chief sales officer, gosh, since we started the podcast, probably 3 or 4 different places?
That's right.
Yeah.
Because when you go to early stage companies, you and I've talked about it. There's a skill set. You got to be a little crazy to go when it's early and messy and not totally figured out. And yet you've got high goals and there's a lot of building. I'm definitely a builder and I love the building. I love the building stage. So that's what I'm drawn to.
Yeah. For me, at startups, it's been the same thing. I'm at that stage. Get too many people, get too established. Nah. That's somebody else's job.
Exactly. Yeah, I like this. I like this early crazy stage. I must be a little crazy, but nobody who knows me would argue with that. They would agree. She's a little crazy.
Well, I love getting in early, getting the first customers. I know. I mean, I love being the underdog, especially selling sort of complex products. Yeah, I love beating the big guys. I mean, that was
so fun. And there's something about these early stage, the passion and the camaraderie and the teamwork and everybody pulling together. Like there's so much energy. There's so much energy. And I really love that.
Yeah.
So I'm having a good time.
Good. Well, I encourage people to go back. If you want to listen to some older episodes of the show, is pick out some of the episodes Bridget and I did. Some of the most memorable. So some great conversations. And we brought some people in to share the fun from time to time. But it's such a thrill to have you back. Because I said, what a special episode. Who would have thought when we started
that we would be here?
Yeah, because you were on one of the first episodes. And like, here we are.
I know. Well, it all started when, again, me on the front lines, my CEO said, he gave me your book, Zero Time Selling.
My first book,
You need to read this. I'm like, okay. I read it I think I read it in a single sitting. And I went to my CEO and said, oh my God, that book was amazing. He said, do you want to meet him? Do you want to meet Andy Paul? And I'm like, oh my gosh, like I'm going to meet a star. And I got to meet Andy. And that was, how long ago was that?
9 years.
Okay. Then, Andy.
Yes.
There's a new book that I just finished. I don't think it's come out yet. Did I get the
No. Answer? So when this episode airs, we will have been a week into our pre-order campaign. So we will announce, we're announcing it on November 22nd.
Okay.
This is perfect.
All right. Are you going to say what the book is? And then.
Sure. So the book is called Sell Without Selling Out. A Guide to Success on Your Own Terms. And I had to have Bridget be one of the first readers of it because she's been there throughout most of the journey.
And I'm a reader.
Like you are Andy, a reader, yes.
I mean, you and I, like we read, I read everything. I read. So I will admit, okay, I loved your last book. I read all of these sales books. I don't know that I was expecting it to be like, yeah, I've read this. Because there's always some things that you read and you've read them before. I was floored. I was floored. I this was an amazing book. And I'm not just saying it because I'm on your podcast, because you know I don't do that. I've said a lot of things on your podcast. You know, I'm not just here to flatter you.
Right.
Listen to a few other episodes. I'm not here to flatter.
No.
And there were so many things. Do you mind if I ask you questions about?
Could you flip the script
and I get to interview you?
We've done this before. You've taken the mic before. Yes.
I know, because I can be bossy. So sometimes I just like to take the mic, like today.
That's fine. Okay. This is now officially Sales Enablement with Bridget Gleason.
All right. So Siri just started talking to me too. Like she heard bossy and she's like, yeah, I got to keep her quiet. Okay. First of all.
Yes.
I love that you dedicated it to your lovely wife, Vicky. Okay. So you got points right off the bat from that. Okay. So that was a good start. And Vicky's amazing. Okay.
Without her, I wouldn't have written any of my books. I wouldn't be on this journey without her.
Okay. So you start by, I could relate to you, and I'm not going to give it all away, but you talk about your early days, Burroughs, your first sales job, going to sales training, and you're like, oh my God. Like you talk about things that are like cringy. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, why didn't you just walk out the door?
Oh, so Bridget's talking about a story. I was at my first sales training class, my first sales job out of college, and I show up and everybody's acting what I call salesy, right? And
that wasn't you.
No, it wasn't me. That's a great question. I think any of us who've been in sales have these moments early on where we don't recognize who we are when we're trying to do things. But I think part of it's just I don't quit stuff, and I think also, you know, it sounds sort of funny, but at various times, I sort of refer to in the book, as various times during early job, it's like, oh my God, if I don't succeed here, if I don't make a go of it, what am I going to tell my parents? Right? It's this thing over our head of our parents to stay with us even as we're adults, right? And so I think that was part of it. It's just, A, it was a challenge. B, as I didn't want to quit and wanted to see if I could do it. But by the same token, as I knew pretty early on, it's like, I can't do it the way they want people to do it.
But you knew enough, or you had enough confidence to challenge it and say, yeah, I'm not going to do it the way they do it. I think I can figure out another way.
Yeah. I think I was fortunate to have bosses that were willing to give me the leeway to do that. But in my mind, and you and I have talked about this before, I think this is one of the issues that exists in sales in general today is sales bosses who are too afraid to give sellers the agency to make their own choices about how they should sell that works best for them, right? I mean, we all operate within frameworks. We all operate within certain processes. But I always remember this quote early from my childhood. I saw the quote when I was a little bit older, but Vince Lombardi, childhood era hero that coached the Green Bay Packers, he always talked about freedom within process, right? Freedom within structures. This is what you had. That's how you enable people to become the best version of themselves. And so I had bosses, and this became role model for me, who said, look, sure, go experiment, go try something, see what works for you. And that's just invaluable as a seller. That's what you need in order to really start working on your craft and be getting better.
I think also as a boss, I need people who are going to think.
Right.
I need thinkers. I need, especially at the stage where I like to be, is I need people who are going to think about how to get a deal done or how to sell into an account or whatever, how to position a product. I need thinkers. So I really resonated with this.
Right. Well, people that act with intention. I think this is when we get force people to be sort of compliance oriented, right? Is this is our playbook. You have to execute it this way. What's the incentive to think? I'm just following steps. And to your point is I want people who are going to be intentional about every step that they take. I've thought this through. I've thought through the ramifications. I've done some what ifs. Yeah, we all role play this thing in our mind before we go out to interact with somebody. Yeah, people sort of treat selling as a paint by numbers thing as just, I think they're at a disadvantage.
Don't you think though that as companies get bigger, that this is what they try to, this is what they think they want is the cookie cutter. Here's the plan. Everybody fits and does exactly what you tell them they're supposed to do. And you just need to get them lined up.
But I don't know, you and I both know people have sold for big companies. I know lots of people sold for IBM. You think, okay, they would be the sort of the master of forcing people to sell a certain way. And they certainly have structure, but some of the smartest, best people I know worked in those environments and were creative in the way they pursued deals and captured deals. And I think that's just the hallmark of top sellers is they always, they color outside the lines. And it's this willingness to color outside the lines. At some point, as a salesperson, you have to take responsibility for this. And I write about this in the book, is you have to be willing to tell a manager, yeah, I don't agree. If there's something they suggest that you don't think will work or you think that isn't aligned with your own set of values or strengths, you have to deliver. If you're going to do something different, you have to deliver. But you need to have the courage to try it.
Well, I think your point there is the right one. What I think about is we want salespeople who are accountable. They're accountable. Mm-hmm. And I've always thought, I don't want to be accountable to your way if I don't think it's right. That like I can't do that. If you're telling me to do a certain way and I don't think it's right and I'm accountable for the results, that's a hard no.
Yeah. And you can do that as a seller. I mean, I think there are bosses who operate from a perspective of fear. We all know that. They maybe don't have enough experience themselves, or they think they can only take comfort in the metrics and the KPIs. But to your point precisely, which is one I write about, is that no one cares about you but you. You sort of have to have this attitude, right? And your bosses may seem supportive, but if they sort of enforce a certain compliance to a certain methodology and you don't succeed, you're going to be gone. And wouldn't you rather leave on your own terms? I did. I mean, that was always my thing. If I wasn't going to succeed, fortunately, it didn't happen very often, but you have the courage of your convictions to say, look, I think there's a better way, and be accountable for delivering.
Yeah, I've said that to CEOs when I go in and take a role. I said, you know what? You're not going to have to worry about firing me for non-performance. Like, I'll see it before you will. And I can't think many of those situations. But no, I'm accountable, and I'm going to hold myself accountable. And if I'm can't be successful, don't you worry. You're not going to have the hard, that's not tolerable for me. And I think that's also is holding ourselves to a high standard and taking responsibility for it, even if it means doing something different than maybe somebody's telling you. Like you say in the book, which I thought was so funny, that a boss or somebody would tell you about a way to do something and you would always be like, well, let me think about that. Well, let me think about it. You wouldn't, and you even have in here where one time they said, like, are you ever just going to say, yes, I'll do that? And you're like,
No. Because it's my career. It was my career at stake. And again, it's not that I was always right. And it's not that I didn't listen to input. As you and I have talked about before, we are the sum total of a myriad of influences that influence us during our career. It's not just one methodology or one boss or one set of experiences. And you need to continue to build on that. And who you are as a seller is unique to you. And as managers, your job should be to encourage that uniqueness that delivers that level of performance.
I don't think most managers have that confidence.
They don't, unfortunately.
Yeah, they don't. I think our managers need better training.
Because absolutely.
I just don't think they have the confidence to let people go do and explore. They feel like it's better if I just keep them on a track. It's not the way I don't operate that way. So it doesn't work for me. But okay. Another thing, just one of the things that struck me, I think why another reason I found the book so interesting is you bring in a lot of references from other people and other books. And so there's just, it's really, you can tell that you are curious and you're a reader, which I love. So there's a lot of interesting references. You've got great stories. And these are the things I think that people remember. Mm-hmm. But you also then have these really practical charts and recommendations. Like you've got, it's a really good combination of things. And one of them that I saw that I really liked is this chart that you have of like a mindset of selling in versus selling out.
Yeah.
For an example, selling out is when you pitch and selling in is when you have a conversation. And you list, selling out is when you tell, selling in is when you ask questions. And you've got a whole bunch of them. And I was reading the list and I thought, gosh, these things are obvious in a way if you've been selling. Like if you've studied mm-hmm. the craft, it's like, and then I was thinking about my experience with salespeople who know this, but they default to selling out.
Right.
They default to the pitch. They default to the tell. They default. And I just thought this is a great, this is just a great reminder, like stays on script versus curious, listening to respond versus listening to understand. You talk a lot about this deep listening, or is it slow listening?
Yeah, slow listening. Listening slowly, yeah.
Listening slowly. And why is it so hard for people to listen?
Well, it gets back. Well, so let me provide context for the selling out, selling in. It's in the book I write about, obviously the title, Sell Without Selling Out. Selling out is, you know, reverting to, or not reverting, or exercising, utilizing a set of sales behaviors, which I call salesy. They're just prototypical, stereotypical behaviors that our buyers don't like. And for instance, and I make one reference to, you know, we're so persuasion driven in sales, and Jonah Berger in his book The Catalyst writes about how studies showing that as humans we are universally resist being persuaded. And yet this is the sort of the fundamental ethos that we imbue and educate our sellers to have. And it's, as I try to point out, is this is not natural human behavior. You know, the ways that we act that our buyers resist are learned behaviors. You know, being pitchy, you know, not being curious, not wanting to connect with somebody, not wanting to get to a deeper level of understanding, which are natural behaviors, we act the opposite way. And so we have to sort of start by changing the mindset of what sellers think their job is. And so this was this dichotomy between selling out and selling in. To me, selling out is, as a seller, you start with this mindset, my job is to persuade you to buy my product. And this is the way that, you know, the vast majority of sellers are educated to believe. Is that's their job. And this is what buyers resist and why they don't like it. On the other hand, for me, selling in is, as a seller, my job is to you know, make a connection, to ask great questions, to listen, to truly understand what's important, most important to the buyer, and then put together a plan to help them get that. And you think about it from the perspective of the actions you take as a seller. If you take one set of actions, if you think your job is to persuade somebody to buy your product, versus my job is to really understand what's most important to them and then help them achieve that, that's a different set of actions that you take. And so for me, it's like start at the ground level. What's my job as a seller? And if we can change that mindset and that perspective, we go a long way to helping people stop selling out.
I think, Andy, if you asked salespeople what their job was, they would say, yes, it's persuading. I need to persuade. Mm-hmm. I need to convince. They would. And if they don't say it, you see it in what they do. You see it, you hear it. And I've even, we use Gong. Mm-hmm. I listen to all the recordings. Mm-hmm.
We'll get you over to the revenue.io side, but you can say Gong for now. Yes.
Oh whatever. I listen to Gong here. I did Zoom before. Well, however it's recorded, record it on your iPhone and I'm going to listen to it. However it gets recorded, I like to listen. And it's still surprising to me the pitching. And I've asked people, why? And they've said to me, this was recent, they said, yeah, we know that that's not really right, but we're so excited about the product and what we're doing that that's what we do. We just can't wait to tell the customer about it. I said, yeah, but you have no idea what they're trying to accomplish. So you're telling them all about an electric car. They may be looking for a bike. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very experienced sellers. This is not just newbies.
I know that's why this is so embedded. And that's why I say we have to just start by changing the mindset about what your job is. Because again, if you think it's to persuade as opposed to help, then like I said, it dictates the way you act. And so the point I'm trying to make in the book and the path we provide is great. Instead of defaulting to pitching and persuasion is, hey, here's four attributes you can focus on: connection, curiosity, understanding, and generosity, to help you help the buyer understand what's most important and help them achieve that.
I think the one in there that a lot of people wouldn't think about is generosity. Mm-hmm. That's you don't often read about that in
a story. No, right. And actually, you know, you go to some quarters and they think this idea of giving is bad, right? Because in their mind, giving means just showing up and throwing up and let's see how many things I can throw against the wall to see what sticks, as opposed to being intentional about what you're giving to help the buyer with their trade-offs and choices they have to make. And that's, you know, again, it's a lot of its perspective, but it's also how people are educated to believe. So, you know, I love Zig Ziglar talking about, you know, you can get everything in life you want if you help enough other people get what they want, right? And that's, you know, we're hardwired to be generous. We're hardwired as humans to, we take pleasure from being generous. It's how do we shape that to be able to, again, to help our buyers achieve what's most important to them. And, you know, it's in part the value we give. And I go into detail about the various types of value you can provide, but it's also about helping them develop this vision of what success means for them. And if you can play a role, because you've built this trust-based relationship with them, you can play a role in helping shape this vision. You're influencing the choices they make in a way that leans towards your product.
So Andy, oh gosh, you know, the stereotypical salesperson is labeled as selfish, self-interest, you know, cares only about that. How much money am I going to make?
Just doing it for myself, yes.
And there are some where that fits the bill. Sure. You know, there are, so this idea of generosity, I think people there are, like, if I were to say that to various CEO bosses I've had over the past several years, I think they'd be like, salespeople, generous. I don't buy it.
Just generous with the discounts.
Yeah, exactly. But I think also for me, when I'm hiring, I do look for people that tend to that direction. Mm-hmm. You know, just innately that they are more generous, just in spirit.
Right.
As opposed to, you know, what have you done for me lately? So I wonder, and I guess how much do you think this is education? How much is sort of how you're wired or brought up, or nurture versus nature? Like, how can you teach? I know this is like very philosophical. You'd be like, Bridget, that's not the book. Okay. We're not getting into. Well,
but it is to some degree. I think that I said before, I think the behaviors we talk about that I call salesy behaviors that buyers detest are learned behaviors. I believe that people, and I'm not the only one, obviously there's a lot of experts in the field that believe this too, is that people are wired as social animals to want to connect with other people. And they're wired to be curious and interested in the world around them. You know, this is how we navigate the world around us, is with our curiosity. And so if we stop using it, our curiosity in a sales situation, how can we navigate through the sales situation? You know, we're wired to want to understand the world around us, to make sense of the world around us. And we're wired to be generous, to give. You know, all the way back from our tribal upbringings, you know, evolution-wise, back hundreds of thousands of years ago. So this is how we are as humans. So it's like, how do we learn it? But to some degree, it's almost unlearning so much of what sellers are sort of trained and educated in today, and changing sort of a new perspective. But it's also about relying more on your sort of innate behaviors as a human, and trust yourself as a human.
Yeah, there's probably part of it that's having been socialized a certain way. Mm-hmm. And then certainly the education for salespeople is... it lends towards selling out versus selling in.
Yeah. And I think the other thing too is we as, you know, leaders in the sales profession and so on, is need to think that, you know, maybe we need to inject a layer of education in our onboarding processes that's about these basic human skills. You know, that we assume that people coming into the workforce understand how to connect with another, make a connection effectively. We understand that people know how to deploy their curiosity. And I think that's just a false assumption. It's nobody's fault, but it's just, you know, we need to train the human and then train the seller after that.
Yeah, you talked about onboarding processes like everybody has them. They really don't sometimes.
Yeah, I know. Just,
and look, I'm at some of these small companies, I'm guilty. This is a little bit of a segue, but I was interviewing someone for, I think it was an SDR role. This is at my previous company. And he was very excited. And he said, you know, he said something about, I'm sure that you're not just going to throw me, you know, into the fire without, like, you're not just going to throw me into the fire. And I said, well, we are, but you will have protective gear, but right. You will be thrown into the fire, but you'll have protective gear. So you'll live through it. So Andy, another part in here that I thought was funny that I could also really relate to, and it's a bit of a controversial topic these days, is personality assessments. Mm. So there was at a previous company, there was one of the executives that believed that, yeah, you should do there's a certain personality type of a salesperson. This is who we should hire in. Mm-hmm. And then if the existing team, if they don't map, the triangle doesn't fit the triangle.
Yeah.
And like you, I was always the wrong shape. Like, I'm just the wrong shape. I just don't fit. Oh, you're supposed to be like that? Oh, no, I'm like that. Like, I'm just the wrong shape.
Yeah, I tell the story in the book about failing a sales personality test just a few years ago.
A few years ago?
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Yeah,
I would fail it. I failed it every time. Like I don't know why I think I would. I know how to though trick it to make. I know how to trick it. So I do. I know how to game the system.
Apparently, I don't. And
well, you probably didn't try.
Well, I didn't try to game it. No, but I guess one of these people, like at a career center, they would tell me I'm qualified to be a shepherd or something like that. But I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the reliability of the personality assessments. I think that they're an interesting data point to use in a hiring process. But yeah, I would never base a significant portion of my hiring decision based on that. Because first of all, there is no one way to sell. There's no one type that sells more successfully than others. We could get 100 of the best salespeople in the world line up and they'd be 100 distinct people. And as managers, you want to lean into that. You want to, again, part of what I'm advocating and that we don't do enough of is how do we enable people to become the best version of themselves? And that's really our responsibility as leaders is to make that happen. And I'm different than you. You can't sell like me. I can't sell like you. And we have different strengths. And then you compound that by the fact that everybody we sell to is unique as well. It's complex. So yeah, not a big fan of the assessments. And I think that if you're looking at how to set characteristics or attributes that you want to hire for, is start with the buyer. What does the buyer need from us in order to make the decision to buy our product and our service and our solution? Start there. And then hire those attributes, not I want a hunter. I mean, who needs a hunter? Buyers never ask for a hunter. Or as I say
also,
in the book.
Also, think about it. Okay, I want a hunter. What do hunters do? They kill. Okay, so that means if I'm the customer, I've got somebody who just sees me like with a target on my back. That doesn't seem like a good symbiotic relationship to me.
No. And as I write about in the book is there's one question a buyer will never ask you, which is, hey, Bridget, I love the product you're selling. I think this could really work for us. But the problem is you're just not salesy enough. Could you be more salesy? And yet this is what we do. We train our sellers and educate our sellers to act more salesy as opposed to more human the way our buyers want us to be. And so back to the topic, if you're hiring and you're trying to create a set of attributes or job definition, start with the attributes that our buyers need.
I agree. And you're right. They're not saying, gosh, I wish she would just present a few more PowerPoint slides to me and not ask me anything. Gosh, I wish she would just keep talking without having any idea what I'm interested in. Can you keep doing that?
Could you be more pushy?
Could you push more? Could you call me, instead of calling me once a day, could you call me twice?
Right.
Because you're not calling me enough.
Right. I'm missing that. Be more salesy. The irony is that, we educate and train sellers in these salesy behaviors, and it's not the answer to any question, right? If you say, well, what will help me win a higher percentage of my deals? Being more salesy is not going to help you win a higher percentage of your deals.
True.
Right? And you can go through the customer challenges. Every challenge your customer has, you being more salesy helps them not at all.
Zero.
You being more curious, you being wanting to connect more, being more trustworthy, having a better understanding, making them feel understood, that has a lot of value.
And the best way to make them feel understood is understanding them.
Yeah.
Like it's somebody asked me once, I had done a presentation and somebody came up after and said, how do you do it that you come across as authentic, like you care? I said, where did you learn that? Like, how did you, I'm like, well, cause I do, like,
Right.
This isn't something I put on and then I walk right. off and then like it's really there.
Well, that's what I said is before is we need to think about in sales is that when we are educating our sellers and our leaders is before we train them for a role, let's educate them what it means to be human in that role. And I think if we do that, if we learn, teach people how to connect right with another your person, you know, simple things I talk about in the book, like learn how to use a bit of small talk to bridge that gap, to build a common ground, how to deploy your curiosity, the types of questions you can ask. And you know, I've got a pretty detailed
list
of different types of questions you can use to help you not only help you understand the buyer better, but help the buyer understand what they're trying to achieve as well better. How to use that curiosity to bridge the gap between just knowing something and truly understanding it. So you can help the buyer feel understood. And then obviously to create a vision of success to help the buyer say, okay,
be successful.
Be successful, right. Those are human skills. And we just need to focus more on those and less about, as you said, putting on the act. And being salesy is an act because, again, it's learned behavior.
Okay, my last question for you, and I know this book hasn't come out yet, but what is your next one going to be on? I'm already anxious for it. Well, because I've already got to read the second one. So it's like, okay, now what?
I think the next one, I've got it outlined and parts of it written, but we'll see, is about how buyers really make decisions.
Right.
So again, along the same lines of this book is, making it very simple to understand and very practical for sellers, because again, I think we're so unaligned or misaligned, whatever the right word is, with our selling processes with the process the buyer goes through. And I refer to it in this book as well. It's a source of frustration that, for instance, like Gartner comes out with their research about buyer enablement a few years ago with this complex flow chart of the processes the buyers are going through. And it's this
start really good
and recursive. And yet not one single sales organization have I met said, we've changed our process to try to align with what their buyers are going through. Instead, we're on parallel tracks. And I love my last rant, perhaps, I love this idea is we've got everybody talking about quote-unquote modern sales. And you research, go on Google and search modern selling process or sales process. And the fact is that almost everybody is using the same linear stage-based selling process that's existed for 50 to 60 years or more. I mean, we've got our initial call, we tweaked a little bit depending on business you're in. We've got a discovery call, then we've got a demo, then we've got a presentation, then we got a proposal, and then we close. And it's like, oh my goodness, none of those mapped what the buyer does.
We should
be talking about where the buyer stands in their process, same way they think about it, right? There should be one process for buying and selling. And use the same terminology. And then you, as a sales leader, when you're helping coach opportunities, you're going through a pipeline review and you want to help your buyer, your seller understand where the buyer really is. That'd make it a lot easier if everybody's using the same terms. So we have to, maybe a last point is, and talk about a little bit in the book, but not as explicitly as, you need to think about selling as a collaboration, not something you do to a buyer.
And I think most of the time we do it to them.
Right.
That's what they would say.
Right.
If that's what how are they you feel. Doing to me?
That's right. But if you take the approach, as I talk about in this book, is to listen, to truly understand what's the most important thing to the buyer and then help them get that, that's a collaboration. And that's the approach you need to take.
It's a great book.
Oh, thank you.
And again, I'm not just saying it. Like I said, I'm not about flattery here.
No.
It's a really, 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 really great book. It's a great read. It's interesting. It's useful. It was a pleasure.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Thank you. So
you're welcome. Until the next time.
Yeah. Well, we don't know when the next time is going to be. We'll talk before then for sure. But Bridget, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Episode 1,000.
Amazing. I like it. I'm privileged. I'm honored. I'm so glad I'm at 1,000.
Oh.
Number. Yeah. I'm glad I'm at this inaugural, this special.
We're starting the second millennium with you.
Great.
And yeah, for people that want to learn more about this book, please visit, you can pre-order it on any place that you buy books. I urge you to go ahead and pre-order it. But maybe before you do that or after you do that, come to andypaul.com and we've got some bonuses, special bonuses for people that pre-order, including a exclusive event with me after the book launches so we can talk about the book. So Bridget, thank you so much.
All right. Take care, Andy. We'll talk soon.
Okay, friends, that's it for this episode. First of all, I want to thank you for taking the time to listen. As always, I'm so grateful for your support of the show. And I want to thank my friend, Bridget Gleason, for sharing the hosting duties with me today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to this podcast, Sales Enablement with Andy Paul, on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And thank you so much for investing your time with me today. Until next time, I'm your host, Andy Paul. Good selling, everyone.
Hey, sales strategists. At Revenue.io, we're not just imagining the future of sales, we're building it. We offer the world's most complete platform for revenue teams, and we're featured in the most recent Forrester Waves for both sales engagement and conversation intelligence. With Revenue.io, you can slash call prep time to seconds, guide your reps in real time to have more successful conversations, and after calls, we generate ready-to-send recap emails so sellers can keep deals soaring toward the finish line at light speed. See the future of sales now at revenue.io.